It's the Gab and Jules Show. There's still no Jules, but next best thing, we have Stuart Robson. Don't worry, Jules fans. He's going to be back on Thursday, as promised. But, Robbo, we have a big show because we'll be talking Kai Havertz and Chelsea. We'll have quick hits. We'll have the Nations League. But we're going to start with Sid Lowe, who's joining us now. We're not going to waste any time and try to get the definitive word on Lionel Messi. Sid, I didn't do anywhere near as much reporting as you did. So I'm going to chuck a lot of questions at you. My first instinct was that this was a power play from Messi and then he was going to stay at the club. So I'm just going to throw questions to you. If Messi wanted to leave Barcelona, why didn't he go out and simply notify the club and exercise his clause in early June? Or did he only decide he wanted to leave after that? Did he only decide he was unhappy after that?
Right, well, I mean, part of the answer we have in Messi's interview after he agreed to stay, and I think the nature of that interview in itself is extraordinary and helps to answer part of this question in so much far as you're saying. I assume, by the way, that when you say a power play, you mean that he never intended to go. He just wanted to shift the balance of power within the club while continuing.
Yeah, he would have been happier staying than going, put it that way.
Right, okay. I think when you listen to the interview, I think I've never heard a player stay at a club and do an interview like that. Never heard anything like it. You know, you talk about acrimonious splits, it's an acrimonious reuniting of Messi and the club. And I think if your intention was to stay, even if it was to shift the balance of power, I'm not sure that that fits the idea that this was a power play. Not least the body language as well as what you actually said. Anyway, specifically in terms of the question, part of the answer is given in that interview in that he says that we're in competition. Imagine the storm. Imagine the trouble had he said this during competition. Imagine that Barcelona lose 8-2 to Bayern Munich. I mean, it's crazy, isn't it? I mean, it's impossible. But imagine Barcelona lose 8-2 to Bayern Munich after Messi has said, I want to leave. There is absolutely no doubt that the narrative surrounding that scoreline is that Messi has ruined this season. That Messi is the one responsible for that because right at a time when they were competing for everything, he came and said this. There is another part of the answer in Messi's interview in which Messi says, I told them. I told them repeatedly. So in other words, he would argue, well, I did inform them. I just hadn't done this formally and officially. And perhaps the argument there would be that he was foolish enough to trust the word of the president. And he actually uses the phrase, the president broke his word. He said, I could go. Let's not talk about this now. We'll deal with it at the end of the season.
Okay, but Sid, this isn't just him, right? This is, you know, Messi has a dad who looks after his interests.
Yes, of course.
They have lawyers who advise him. If your heart is set on going, given how well you know Bartomeu, given how well you know that this is a club whose president presumably sanctioned or gave approval to have a media or a social media company go and manipulate social media against certain people, given everything you know about everything that happened with Bartomeu over the last few years, are you really going to trust him? Are you really going to trust his word and not get something in writing?
Well, of course you don't trust the word, which is why I think eventually they did the bureau fact. But I think those other elements of it are still valid. I think it is still valid to believe that you took them on their word, not least because I suspect that deep down, Messi probably thought they would quite like me to go. And so long as it's my fault, they will let it happen. Even if it means negotiate something, they will let it happen. I would suggest as well that it's perfectly plausible that the legal advice that they took to make this happen didn't come until later. I also think there's a couple of other elements, which is that who knows if Messi says he wanted to do this all season, he kept telling them, but I wonder if he was emotionally putting this off and then the Bayern Munich thing said, right, that's it. That really is it now. You know, so maybe he didn't exercise it because he wasn't sure, but the Bayern Munich decision finally forced him into that position. There's another question which I think is significant here. And obviously, we will never fully know quite how significant. But on the 10th of June, which is the deadline for saying this, bear in mind that Messi wants to go. Why? Because he wants to win the Champions League before he ends his career at Barcelona because he's desperate. He's genuinely desperate to win it. He's won 1 in 9. So he's thinking, how do I best do this? I go to Manchester City. On the 10th of June, Manchester City weren't in next year's Champions League or the year after's Champions League. And so if Manchester City really is your exit strategy, I'm not saying it's the only one, but it's the one that you believe is the best way out, the best way to resolve this, at that point on the 10th of June, that's not an exit strategy for you. And so I think that's part of it as well. Now, none of this is to say that Messi hasn't handled this badly and that there aren't some flaws in both the argument and also, in the framework that he used, the mechanism that he used, the path that he tried to follow to get out. But I do think that there is so much, there has been so much said, so much done, and the response to his saying that I think we can take at face value that absolutely he did want to leave. I don't see this as a power play, not least because if it was a power play, I'm not sure what he's gained now. And I'm not sure what the necessity of a power play was.
All right, I'll tell you.
Going out in March anyway.
But I'll tell you what potentially he gained. He can basically name the next Barcelona president. And he can name.
I think he could have done that anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's a fair point.
But what about the manager as well? Where does this leave Ronald Koeman? We're not sure that Ronald Koeman even wants Messi there.
No, I think that's quite right, and I doubt that Koeman wants Messi there. Koeman himself said, "I only want players who want to be here." I think Koeman, in terms of the way that he will be judged, may well be thinking, if Messi goes, I get cut a little bit of slack. I don't think it's quite as much of a cop out option as that. I also think there's another thing, and I get to do it the way I want to do it. I construct this team the way I want to do it, not conditioned by Messi, because it's worth asking these questions about Messi's culpability, at the very least in the creation of a culture at the club. And it's curious because, you know, you talk about, and this fits with Koeman, it fits with the managers, it fits with the signings, and it fits with the president. There is this curious contradiction, which is that Messi doesn't really want the responsibility of leading the club. But, of course, he does want the club led in the direction he wants it led in.
Yeah,
in a way, indirectly, because there's this kind of circle of people trying to interpret and second-guess Messi and do things the way that help Messi. And there's this phrase that gets used a lot, that Bartomeu consistently tried to make Messi happy. Well, by doing that, he's made him unhappy. Well, so this is this kind of contradiction at the heart of the whole thing, that Messi is partly culpable of building this culture, but it's ultimately what's meant that the relationship between him and the club has broken down.
All right. I'm still trying to unpack this from the Manchester City angle. We're led to believe that he was in contact with Pep and Pep was a lifeline. I take your point about what you said before. I've raised a point myself that on June 10th, City were out of the Champions League. I'm wondering, if you're Pep and you have a year left on your contract and you haven't extended your contract and you have a team that plays a certain style of football, which is not the football you played at Barcelona 10 years ago, and you're not getting the Messi you had 10 years ago, are you going to be that enthusiastic about taking him back? I mean, what do we know about how far City went to get Lionel Messi?
Well, look, I mean, it's interesting. Look, I say this as someone, of course, who covers Spanish football and so can't give you a sufficiently detailed answer about Manchester City and City fans. And you two will both know City far better. But there is a little bit of me that thinks Messi does resolve some of City's problems, doesn't he? In that City is a team, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, because I say this as someone who's a partial watcher of City, not a detailed watcher of City. City is a team that creates a lot of chances, has a huge amount of the ball, actually sometimes doesn't take its chances, actually sometimes wants to walk the ball into there, actually sometimes doesn't finish the opportunities they create. Messi is a fantastically technical player. Messi has a huge amount of qualities, but he is not a player that falls into the trap of overplaying despite his talent. Right? If the ball comes to Messi, he puts that ball in the net for you. Messi would make, I suspect, that Manchester City attack more efficient, despite the fact he's a player who does so much more than just score goals. And I think he would give them... I know this is stating the obvious up to a point, but I sometimes think that people don't take this on board sufficiently, and so I think it probably is worth stating this obvious point. Messi is so much better than everybody else. I mean, genuinely, over the last 10 years, it's not just that Messi has been the best for 10 years. It's been the best for 10 years by an enormous distance. And even now...
Wait. Sid. You know the Cristiano fanboys are listening to you. You sure you want to... you want to rephrase that? You want to say he's been in the top two?
Sid is absolutely right to say what he's saying.
All right.
Okay. All right. No. I think you're both right in the sense that, look, I'm saying this from a Spanish point of view, from watching him every week. Okay, I have absolutely no problem at all with putting Ronaldo into this conversation, because if we were talking about Ronaldo going to Man City, I'd be saying broadly the same things. It's a team that doesn't take its chances, isn't efficient. You stick Ronaldo in that team, give him those chances. That ball goes in the net every time. Right,
and I think if he went to Man City, he wouldn't have the same power as he's got at Barcelona, and I think he would want to play for Pep Guardiola, and he'd want to do the things that Pep Guardiola wanted him to do, and he would be magnificent attribute for an addition to Man City's team.
I think this is a key point, right? So, obviously this is intuitive because you never know how it will play out, but it seems to me that there are lots of ways, reasons why Messi would work, and one is, as I've just said, because I just think he's so good. And I do think sometimes people don't appreciate how ridiculously good he's been over the last 10 years. And I would completely accept the argument, and in particular from Ronaldo fans, who would be entirely justified to say this. Ronaldo has been decisive in a team that won 4 Champions League in 5 years. Messi hasn't done that. I completely accept that. And I have absolutely no truck with that whatsoever. And as I say, if you put Ronaldo in the City team, he would score bucket loads of goals as well. I think so. Messi is useful for City because I think he does raise the level, and I think those chances get finished off. And I do think he is better than the players in that team. I also think there is another thing, and that's the point there about Messi's role in it. I think City is, while this sounds contradictory, the perfect combination of a manager who knows Messi and will build a team to suit Messi and make it work around him, but also a team that doesn't depend wholly on him. And I think one of the problems that Barcelona have had is that Barcelona have played to Messi and depended on Messi too much. To the extent that a guy who's running one-on-one with a goalie will look to see if he can pull it back to Messi rather than put it in the net. And those, of course, are bad habits that I think have developed over years. And right. I think one of the beauties of Messi being put in the City team is there will be enough players who haven't developed those bad habits yet. And yes, they may look to Messi. Yes, they may defer to him, but not to the extent of that dependency that we saw at Barcelona, which was problematic. And so I think you have this lovely combination of a team that builds towards Messi and knows how to get the best out of him, but that doesn't actually bow down to him in everything, that has a strict mechanism and a structure and a plan that, frankly, as Messi said in that interview, Barcelona have not had. And Messi's a curious player because Messi needs things to be done for him or wants things to be done for him, but at the same time doesn't really want that. And it's a theory, this. But one of the ways I look at Messi as a way of trying to define him is I think one of the reasons why Messi loved Neymar wasn't just because they played well together. Wasn't just because Neymar was a really good player. Wasn't just because, this worked and they won a European Cup. But Neymar actually had the character to do things his way, to not always defer to Messi. And on the face of it, you might think Messi would be thinking, hang on, I'm the boss guy here. I think it's the opposite. I think Messi wants players around him who are good enough and have the character enough to say, right, we'll do it another way. We'll take some of that responsibility off you. And I feel like if Messi went to City without the institutional pressures, without the captain's armband, without that sense of everyone deferring to him, and by the way, deferral is sometimes hiding. People hiding behind him and putting everything on
okay,
him.
Okay, you've sold me. You've sold me.
Oh, good. I'm
Let's
glad.
Move on. Yeah. It's a wonderful hypothetical. All right, I want to end this because I'm trying to cheer Barcelona. I'm trying to cheer my Barcelona supporting friends up. The other day, I was asked to go and put together hypothetical Barcelona 11, now that we know that Messi's staying. I'm going to run through it. If you tell me something where I'm wrong, just stop me. Feel free to interrupt me. As you know, I don't take interruptions personally. In fact,
you usually
I encourage
do.
Them. What?
You usually do.
Sometimes, but not from Sid. Just from Jules. All right. So Ter Stegen's your goalkeeper, and hopefully he'll sign a new contract. Right back, I'm assuming Semedo again, maybe Sergio Roberto, depending on the mood. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Your center backs will be Longley. Gerard Piqué offered to leave if he's part of the problem. He's still there, so I'm assuming he doesn't see himself as part of the problem. And your left back will presumably be Jordi Alba. Yes?
Can I interrupt you there?
Yes, absolutely.
That back four is not good enough.
Yeah, but that's a whole other issue. This is what they have now. So you're saying they need to sign a defender, yeah?
No, but it's curious. You look at the talk of the players they want to sign, and they're all in the midfield of the forward line. And there's a bit of me that looks at that back four and says, why aren't they talking about signing people in this position? But anyway, there you go. Carry on.
No, I'm not going to be disputing that. Midfield is where things get really, really hairy because it seems like they have a whole, other than De Jong, it seems like they have a whole bunch of guys who are sort of much of a muchness. So in this hypothetical, Wijnaldum was in there because, well, he's Dutch. I got to assume that's why Wijnaldum and Depay have been linked. So I was asked to make a lineup with Wijnaldum.
Similar sort of player to Vidal, who's leaving.
Yeah, you could get Wijnaldum to do the Vidal job, some of it, anyway.
But people didn't think that Vidal was good enough in that role at Barcelona, did they?
Okay, so De Jong is a definite starter, I assume, yes, when everybody's fit?
Yeah.
I assume they signed Pjanic for a reason. Maybe he alternates with Busquets in that some kind of deeper position. And then the third...
I would say Pjanic should play higher up the field.
You're going to have to tell me on Pjanic because I don't know enough about
Well, let me tell you, Sid. Pjanic, when he was at Roma, played further forward and he was an excellent passer of the ball. He created opportunities for people. Since he was with Sarri at Juventus and he played as the holding midfield player, I think that takes away his passing. He doesn't pass it over 50 yards anymore. He passes it square and backwards. He's almost made him another Jorginho, and he's not good enough defensively to be the holding midfield player. So if they do play Pjanic, I think he's got to play higher up the field.
Would he naturally be one of a midfield three in the inside right or inside left?
That's exactly where he should play.
But I don't think that's what he was signed for. But anyway, time will tell. So, but if he's not, then I would assume De Jong or Busquets would be the guy in the middle. Yeah. And then you've got Ricky Puig, good player, and you'd have Wijnaldum coming in.
Yeah,
Coutinho is going to be back, but is he going to be back until they find a home for him? What's your sense there?
No, the suggestion so far has been, now I don't know if this is, I assume it is market driven, the absence of really big options to buy him. He's been told he's part of the plans. Now, obviously we've got another question mark, which is you're going through this midfield. First of all, we don't know what shape this midfield is. This is Barcelona, so we all assume it's 4-3-3, but there's been suggestions that Koeman would go for a 4-2-3-1. In which case, the two deep midfielders, I guess, would be De Jong and Pjanic together, or maybe De Jong even with Busquets. Busquets, not likely to be a starter every game, but will certainly start some games. And then you've got a line of three. And, the reason I jump in and say this now is because you're talking about Coutinho. What's Coutinho's position here? Is he one of a forward three? If it's a 4-2-3-1, is he one of that line of three? And if he plays on the left-hand side, what do you do with Ansu Fati? What do you do with Dembele? Who do you put in that position? And it's quite convoluted, this, and there isn't a clear answer to how you, first of all, how you even, which structure you choose, and then which players you choose to go into that structure.
And in the scenario they had me doing was they all took it as read that Memphis Depay was coming in. I like Memphis a lot. I think he got a raw deal and he was very good at Lyon, but is it going to be Memphis or Griezmann as your centre forward?
Yeah, where does he play? I mean, Lyon, he's played as a withdrawn centre forward when he was...
Which is what Griezmann is, right? A withdrawn centre forward.
Well, maybe. I mean, look, not only that, but if you're trying to buy someone for the Barcelona forward line and Suarez is the person that's leaving, then you would say you buy a number nine who actually is a number
nine. You've got to buy an out-and-out centre forward, not a withdrawn centre forward.
You've got to buy a number nine because... And if you're not going to do that, well, then your number nine is Griezmann. But if you're going to buy a withdrawn centre forward, so what? So he drifts into that position where Ricky Puig would play. He drifts into the position where Messi goes. He drifts into the position where Griezmann goes. Or, all right, okay, so maybe you're playing on the left-hand side of a front three. Well, what do you do with Ansu Fati, who is the one player at the moment that people are really excited about? What do you do with Dembele?
Dembele's going to get injured, so it's not really a fact.
That's a fair point. That is a fair point. But I say this again, a bit as like I said about Pjanic, as someone who doesn't know enough about Depay. But I look at him, and given the roles that he can play, and given the players that are already in the Barcelona team, I must admit, I look at him and I think, what's the point?
Yeah.
I would agree with you. He's a good player, but he's not going to take Barcelona to the next level. He's going to be, again, a player that links up with a centre-forward. He's not the out-and-out centre-forward. And Barcelona haven't got centre-forward.
All right, we got to let Sid go, but I'm just going to put this out there. Ronald, if you're watching, you know who is a genuine centre-forward, and I believe he's available on a free transfer, and he's also Dutch, Bas Dost. Think about it, Ronald. Sid, thanks so much.
Nice one. Here we go.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Messi. Robbo, I never thought I'd say enough Messi. It seems weird. But anyway, we got other things to talk about, like the fact that Chelsea finally completed the signing of Kai Havertz. Mm. Your thoughts?
He's a player that plays in the number 10 role. That's the way I think he would play for Chelsea. He's somebody that glides across the ground. He's a very good passer of the ball. I would liken him to Mesut Ozil when he was at his very best. I've not always seen him dominate games. He drifts in and out of games.
But he just turned 21.
Yeah, I think he's going to get better. I think he's going to be an outstanding player, but he has to play in that number 10 role or slightly to the right-hand side. But you're not quite as convinced, are you?
No. Okay, let me clarify this because I wasn't convinced that this deal was going to happen. And part of the reason was I spoke to somebody at Chelsea or isn't familiar with it at the start of the summer when he was being heavily linked. And what I was told was that he was not a priority, that they were going to sort out their defense first and the goalkeeping. And at the time, Bayer Leverkusen, if you remember, they were asking for 130 million euros. You know, that's like Jadon Sancho type money. And it seemed that like you had this continuous drip of information coming from the Leverkusen build camp over there. And so what I was told was Chelsea are only going to get him on their terms, you know, if they think this deal is too good to pass up. And I think it fits into that. Because what's curious is the transfer fees, right? We have very reliable people in Germany and in England who are reporting very different transfer fees, right? In Germany...
Mind you, that's quite often the case.
Well, it is, because it often depends who you're talking to, right? So in Germany, they were talking 80 million euros plus 20 million euros in add-ons and bonuses. You know, people are putting out their...
Which would be too much for Kai Havertz at the moment.
Around 90 million pounds. Well, it's too much when there's no auction. When the guy wants to leave, the guy's agreed terms with the club, there's no other bidder. It didn't make sense to me. Whereas here in England, for example, Matt Law, the Telegraph, who's very tight on Chelsea things, he came out and he said 62 million pounds plus 8 million in bonuses. So that is a pretty big gap. It would fit with my information. I think Chelsea view this as we're accumulating assets here. This is not somebody who is central to our plans. We would be comfortable without him. But at that price, we have to get him because he's going to have an upside because he's a tremendous talent.
He only has an upside if he plays week in, week out and plays well.
He does and he doesn't. I mean, what I mean is, I think there's a lot of reasons to look at him and actually say, you know what? He's a bit of a project. He's a little green. He started very young. You know my thoughts on Peter Boss at Bayer Leverkusen. I don't think he's the greatest coach or player developer in the world. I think that's a bit of an understatement. Havertz was used all over last season, right? He played as a center forward. He played wide. He played as an attacking midfielder. It looks to me like Chelsea are already pretty much stocked in those positions where they don't necessarily need him. Because you talked about him playing in the hole, right? Well, Ziyech can play in the hole. Mason Mount can play in the hole. In fact, you could argue...
Barkley could do exactly the same.
Yeah, maybe not as well.
But they're the players that have been playing in that position.
Exactly. You have a lot of options there. And if you're talking about playing him on the right, again, you've got Ziyech, you've got Callum Hudson-Odoi who can play in that position. Pulisic, I'm sure, could switch flanks if necessary. And at center forward, you've got Timo, Tammy, and Ollie.
Yeah.
And maybe even Michy, although I assume he's going on loan. So I kind of saw it that way. I think at that price, I think it makes sense because, you know, that is, I think, a good price where a guy's going to have an upside. But I think it just goes to show that when you report on the transfer market, right, clubs don't like to show their hands. And sometimes you get a little bit suspicious. I think Leverkusen were hoping to generate an auction in them. And then it never happened. I would have thought at that price, you'd have, you know, Manchester United. Obviously, they went for Van de Beek instead. Manchester City. I mean, who wouldn't want a talent like that?
But when I watch Kai Havertz last season, he's not, doesn't dominate games enough. He plays well. He drifts in and out of games. He provides a pass. He go past someone with the ball.
But he's so young, though.
But he's so young. But he's but
and that skill set is pretty unusual because you liken him to Ozil, but
yeah.
Ozil is a little fella. This guy is 6'2".
Yeah. But he's not going to burst past people, though. He's not going to be a counter-attacking player. He's going to be a player that, in and around the box, he's going to create, he's going to play those little balls down the side, probably for Timo Werner to make his runs. So he's a good talent, but I'd like to see him dominate games. If you're going to play in that number 10 role, you've got to dominate games. You've got to be a real influence on the match.
So when I look at Chelsea right now, and I ask myself, who is guaranteed a start in this team? In midfield and attack. I mean, we'll get to the back a little later. I would have thought the only guy who you would assume would be an automatic choice would be N'Golo Kanté.
Yeah.
And yet, weirdly, N'Golo Kanté really heavily, heavily linked to Inter Milan. And it seems that Antonio Conte realizing that, oh, if I tantrum, they get me the things I want, right?
Yeah. And if you look at Conte's record, when he defends well and when he's fully fit, it makes the defence so much more so much better. And everybody was talking about Chelsea's poor defensive record last season. Yes, they made some mistakes defensively, but it's also about the midfield players you've got in front of them. Are they athletic enough? So can they work
he's
hard
29.
Enough?
If you're Chelsea, you can't think about letting him
no,
go.
No, absolutely not. He's key to everything they do. If you've got attacking players like Ziyech on one side and Pulisic on the other and Kai Havertz playing in there, Timo Werner up front, and you haven't got any other sort of defensive midfield players apart from Jorginho's a passer rather than a defender. You've got to have Conte in your side to defend that back three or back four, whatever they're going to play with.
What I find interesting is that we don't know what formation Frank's going to play because he's played a back three, he's played 4-3-3, he's played 4-2-3-1, he's played 3-4-3. I look at this and because I think your only 100% starters are Conte, maybe Azpilicueta. Maybe,
I'm not sure
but even
anymore.
Then you're not sure. Yeah. I think it's Conte and Chilwell.
Yeah, Chilwell. And
nobody else.
Yeah, maybe two players. Yeah.
Is guaranteed a start.
And I would say Timo Werner will play most of the games.
Not if Pulisic plays, and occasionally you need a big striker. And you, have, I mean, it's.
I can't have Olivier Giroud in the side. And I can't have Tammy Abraham at the moment.
Let's try to project forward. Okay, first of all, give me the formation that. We're guessing. Nobody's going to hold you to this. No. Nobody's going to go back and say, oh, Robbo got it all wrong.
I think if you're buying the sort of players that they're buying, mm-hmm. you've got to stick them in the team to start with. And I think they'll play Timo Werner up front.
No. Give me the formation.
So it's going to be 4-2-3-1.
4-2-3-1. Okay. Yeah. So the goalkeeper will either be Kepa or somebody they buy.
Yeah.
They've been obviously linked with a number of players, with Maignan, with Mondi. I'll see. I think they might even go back for Onana. Who the hell knows? You're right back.
Well, that's a choice between Azpilicueta and James.
Yes, Captain Obvious. Who do you go for?
Yeah, I'm going to go for Azpilicueta to start with.
All right, I would go with Reece James. There you go.
And then you've got two centre-halves. Thiago Silva will come in and be the sort of dominant player. And I would go with Rudiger as the other centre-half. I think Rudiger's better than the other centre-halves that Chelsea have.
Yeah, I don't think Rudiger hit some ups and downs last season, but I would agree with you. I think Rudiger's a good option if you're going to back four. Your left back is Chilwell.
Who's a good attacking left back? Because Azpilicueta, if I play Azpilicueta, will come a little bit narrow to make a back three at times when Chilwell gets forward. And then you've got to have two central midfield players that can do both sides of the game.
We don't want to sell Conte.
He's got to play.
All right.
And I would start, of all the players at the moment, it would have to be Kovacic. He had a good season last year. I think he's the best one to play with Conte. And that would be your two central midfield players. But there'd be a lot of players sort of vying for that position.
If you're going to play two, you're talking obviously in a two, they tend to sit a little deeper.
Yeah.
They don't have a bazillion options in that position because, you know, Barkley can do it, Loftus-Cheek can do it, but
Jorginho
is
still there.
Jorginho's still there. We assume he's going to go, but we don't know. Mm. And obviously, you got the kid Billy Gilmore, who he really, really likes. I'm assuming Jorginho goes. You keep Billy Gilmore to give you options if you want to play with a deep playmaker.
Yeah, but as a midfield player, you have to be able to do both. And, you know, everyone talks about an attacking midfield player, a defensive midfield player. I would say Kovacic can do both. He can do well enough defensively, but he also can break forward and be a good passer of the ball. I think Mason Mount can do that as well. Loftus-Cheek can do that.
In a two.
Yeah, they can. I think they can do both sides of the job. They're physically capable of doing that.
Okay.
It's only if they're unathletic you can't do the defensive side of the game, and that's why I've never been a fan of Jorginho.
All right.
And then you've got the next three players in front, which I would pay Ziyech on the right hand side.
Go ahead of Hudson-Odoi.
Rather than Hudson-Odoi at the moment. Hudson-Odoi, yeah, will get games, but it's Ziyech who comes in and plays on that right
hand side. When Hudson-Odoi regains full fitness, we'll know. Because that injury takes like another 6 months after you come back, right? If he goes back to being that sort of player, I mean, it's hard to get him out of the lineup, I think.
Yeah, if you're spending money on Ziyech to come from Ajax to play on that right-hand side, I think you're going to start with him. Then Kai Havertz playing in the number 10 role, gliding across the field and picking out his passes, but he's got to be more dominant.
Which Mount and Ziyech could also do theoretically.
They could do, yes.
Barkley could do theoretically. Loftus-Cheek could do theoretically.
They don't do it. All those Chelsea players you've mentioned haven't done it consistently enough. And that's why they're still looking to bring players in. And then on the left-hand side, I think come the end of the season, despite his injury, Pulisic was the outstanding player in that position on the left-hand side. So I think he will start if he's fit.
And the alternative to Pulisic being Timo Werner, but you've got Timo Werner at centre-forward.
Timo Werner has to play up front for me. I think he's a much better centre-forward than he is wide player. And he just gives Chelsea something different. Tammy Abraham started the season well, but I don't think it's quite good enough to play week in, week out. And Olivier Giroud, I'm not a fan of at all, even though he's
very handsome. He's easily...
Yeah,
Chelsea's
that's
most
not why you pick.
Yeah,
it's not why you pick him in the side.
It doesn't hurt.
Yeah, you used to pick Alisson in the Roman side because he was also handsome.
He's also very handsome. Yeah. Well, the way I look at this, obviously Chelsea have spent a ton of money. Although I think their net spend is round about 125 million because obviously they got the Morata money in, they got Pasalic. I think they're good. They have a number of players that they can shift. Bakayoko. Presume one out of Barkley or Loftus-Cheek, I would assume, would go. Jorginho may go, just because they just have
too many players,
too many bodies. But just to make this clear for people who still don't seem to understand it, is in terms of amortization, some of these guys that when you send these people on loan, as long as you get a loan fee and you get their and you get their wages off the books for a year, which in many of these cases Chelsea can do. Like Bakayoko, for example, is willing to take a pay cut to go to Milan on loan if it happens. I mean, I don't know. They're still negotiating that.
You're negotiating it, are you?
No, I'm not involved in that particular transfer. But you get, you gain flexibility there. But I still look at this and I still think, their strategy this year is like, nobody's spending. Let's spend. Let's accumulate assets. And let's see where we are a year from now. But they have to be smart. They have to make sure you don't have guys, sitting in the back gathering dust, never playing, while being fit. Because obviously they're going to depreciate
like Alonso,
value.
There's another player that if Chilwell comes in and does really well, where does Alonso fit into it all? Only if they change their system.
And they have Emerson, of course, as well, who... It's interesting. If you commit to a back four, you keep Emerson because Emerson can be your backup in a four much better than Alonso can. But Alonso, for all the criticism of his defending and stuff.
He's still a good outlet when he's playing as a left wing back.
He's devastating, I'd say. He's more than good. And he gives you a target on set pieces as well. So anyway, lots for Frank Lampard to get stuck into. We'll see how things shake out.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, enough of all that. Time for some quick hits.
Let's do it.
Luis Enrique's new look Spain, featuring the likes of Sergio Reulon, Dani Olmo, and especially 17-year-old wunderkind Ansu Fati, rolled past Ukraine 4-0. Ansu Fati scored a great goal to become Spain's youngest ever goal scorer, but it was an old head, Sergio Ramos, who bagged two goals to become the highest scoring defender in the history of international football. Robbo, who do you want to celebrate? The grizzled veteran?
No, I'm going to go with Ansu Fati, because in the first half he put
in a
great
performance. No love for Sergio Ramos, man.
Yeah, he played well, he scored all those goals, but the first half was all about Ansu Fati. He did brilliantly, scored a great goal, went past people with such ease. He was playing on the left-hand side, they kept on switching the play out to him. He had a great understanding with Reguilón. He did everything you would want from a young player. Second half he didn't play quite so well, but that first half was sensational.
Kind of a B-list Spain, yet they still look good. Hmm.
Germany are held by Switzerland, 1-1. Jogi Löw still hasn't won a Nations League game in 6 attempts. Cause for concern?
Not specifically within the Nations League context. And obviously, you know, it's, the break comes at the wrong time. Nobody's fit, blah, blah, blah. Mitigating excuses for everybody. But they genuinely didn't look good. I mean, they had enough chances to score. But he's making choices that I think some people are starting really, really to question. And, you know, he's, after what happened last time, he's slightly running out of credit. I wouldn't be surprised.
So he's under a bit of pressure, you would say.
He's not going to get sacked, but I think these Euros are going to be his last, put it that way. England beat Iceland 1-0 thanks to a late penalty and thanks to the fact that Iceland themselves miss a last-minute penalty with a bit of help from James Ward-Prowse, who scuffs up the penalty spot. Gamesmanship, dark arts. Mm. Oh, and Kyle Walker gets himself sent off. Thoughts?
I didn't like the fact that Gareth Southgate said after the game, we were patient and we had the good build-ups. We need to be that little bit more patient. That's not the way you play against a team like Iceland. That's what they want. They want you to play slowly. They want to play you to play in front of them. You need to get more crosses into the box. Get it wide. Get crosses into the box. Get midfield players making runs into the box as well. Get quality into the box. And they'll put the opposition under pressure. Score that early goal. Then you can be patient because the other team have to come out. They were too patient too early on. Cristiano Ronaldo missed Portugal's 4-1 win over Croatia with a toe infection. That means he'll have to wait for his 100th international goal, Gab.
Yeah, that's right. It'll come. Don't worry, Cristiano fans. Funny enough, Portugal looked really good. João Cancelo scored a phenomenal goal. They look good without him. I'm sure they'll even better with him. He got into a little bit of trouble because he was watching the game without his mask, and then people advised him to put his mask on. So good for you, Cristiano, that you did that. Manchester United are linked with left-back Sergio Reguilón, the aforementioned Mr. Reguilón. Robbo, is it just because he and Mason Greenwood started following each other on Instagram, or would he be a good signing, a good alternative to Luke Shaw and Brendan Williams?
No, excellent player. He played really well in the game against Ukraine. He actually got injured in the very last minute with a twisted ankle, but it wasn't just his quality with the ball going forward. It wasn't his overlapping runs and his speed. It was also his recovery runs, winning the ball back so quickly. He was outstanding along with Ansu Fati.
Really good season at Sevilla, I thought.
Yeah. Kylian Mbappe scores a great goal. Antoine Griezmann misses a late penalty, but it's Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who wasn't even there, who takes the headlines as France beats Sweden 1-0. Gab, what happened?
Yeah, I think he called Janne Andersson, the Sweden coach, he called him a joke, and then he put a naughty word in front of it. Had to do with the fact that the wunderkind Dejan Kulusevski started on the bench, left out by Seb Larsson, of all people. Kulusevski, of course, just moved to Juventus for a lot of money. People were excited to see him. Kulusevski did come on, and he said after the game, "I was surprised that I didn't start." And Ibra, obviously, piling on a little bit. I think this is a manageable situation, but I'll put it this way. Kulusevski, I would expect him to start the next game. Dani Ceballos is back on loan at Arsenal, and Mesut Ozil is reportedly off the naughty step and in line for start next weekend against Fulham. Robbo, who's going to contribute more this season?
Well, I can't see that Mesut Ozil is going to contribute too much. He's been out in the wilderness for quite some while. He hasn't done too much over the pre-season at the end of last season. So I would say Dani Ceballos, who did really well at the end of the season alongside Xhaka in central midfield, I think he will contribute more.
Yeah, just kind of wish maybe, I guess it's a sign of the situation that they're in. They can't get him on a permanent deal just yet.
Now, Liverpool keep getting linked to Thiago Alcantara, but haven't actually bought anybody apart from Tsimikas in this transfer window. In fact, they haven't really bought anybody that's going to be starting player since Alisson and Fabinho 2 years ago. Any ideas why?
Well, it seems surprising when you look at their accounts and they've been profitable, and obviously they won the Champions League and they won the league and got all this money coming in. If you're into this, I love plugging him because he's one of the guys who explains it really well. Go check out a social account called Swiss Ramble. The guy who writes it, Kieran, explains this very, very clearly. But basically,
Liverpool. You're advertising somebody else.
I am.
That's a miracle.
Because he's that good. Yeah, no. But basically, Liverpool are in a situation where they've got a They've got really good books accounting-wise, mm-hmm. but in cash terms, they're not really where they are, partly because the owners don't load up more debt onto the team, and also the owners don't just keep putting money in just on the cash side. That's the short answer. I don't think it's an issue. I mean, I think they could easily and reasonably and cheaply raise some debt to sign somebody if they wanted to. But I think that does explain why over the last 2 years they've been a little bit cautious. The upshot is they've got really good chemistry in the team.
So one quick question, a quick answer. Will it cause them a problem this year?
I don't think this year, but I think at some point they need to refresh the team because they've got a lot of guys in their late 20s, early 30s. Fabio Silva only turned 18 in July. He's made one league start for Porto, and he's played 197 minutes of top-flight football. And yet, he's moving to Wolverhampton Wanderers for 40 million euros. Make sense to you?
Not really. 40 million pounds for potential. But if anybody knows anything about him, it will be the Wolves hierarchy and their staff, because most of them are Portuguese. So they must know a lot about him. He's done well at the youth level. But 40 million? I don't think that makes sense.
That's a ton of money, I think, sure to be scrutinised, given who's involved with that club.
Alexis Sanchez said he realised on his very first day of training at Manchester United it wasn't the right club for him. Have you got any sort of... are you sad for him, or have you got any sympathy for him?
He was absolutely crucified by a number of pundits and columnists for saying that. He's not asking for sympathy. He's just saying, I went there and I didn't realize what was going on behind the scenes. And my first day, I had regrets. And obviously, he was terrible when he was there. And he had a huge salary. And so, people expected a lot more from him, rightly so, because he didn't play to his salary. It's as simple as that. But it doesn't make him a bad person. And I actually like the fact he's not asking for sympathy. No, he's just saying, like, I realized straight away this was a bad fit. So, less
good season into this year.
Coming up, because his past one, he had a lot of injuries and only really came through. We'll see. He's got should get on the pitch. Milan have signed Brahim Diaz on loan from Real Madrid. He's 21. He was hugely hyped at City before going to Real Madrid. Is it time for him to perform?
Absolutely. 21 years old. He's got to start performing now. And that's the problem when you go to two big clubs and you're a young player that everybody thinks is talented. You don't get enough game time. He hasn't had enough game time, so he needs to move on and perform. Now, Mahrez and Laporte have been tested positive for COVID, we've just learnt. This is when the Daily Mail are reporting that the Premier League will not allow clubs to postpone matches if they suffer coronavirus outbreaks unless they have fewer than 14 players available. Does this make sense to you?
They have no choice. They got to take a hard line on this because obviously the Euros are coming up next summer. The schedule's already way, way congested. It seems a little bit cruel to me that, 14 guys, but most of these clubs have big under 23 sides, youth teams. It should get interesting. I just hope we don't have an outbreak so we don't have that problem. Right, that brings us to an end. Thanks for joining us. Jules is back on Thursday. Keep watching.